Hello, everyone, and this is the American Israelite Newspaper podcast, the Let There Be Light podcast. And we're kind of in a hurry today. I'm here with my other co-host.
Julie Babs Bernson-Brook, Yehuda Basha.
Very good, folks.
Bat Shlomo, Vahana Gitel HaKohen. And I have another name, too. Hey. So Barry's real last name is not Brook, it's Chafkin. So I technically could be Julie Chafkin.
How do you spell Chafkin?
C-H-A-F-K-I-N.
Where are they from?
Russia, Poland, in that area. Changed their name at some point. I've been gone.
I never knew that.
Yeah, so.
And, you know, I've known him since I was in high school. We used to run together in the cross-country team.
And he still runs. Don't run. I run.
I run sometimes to the bathroom, but I do run. No, I do play golf, and I do a lot of that stuff. But, you know, I've been thinking lately, I've had, like, the COVID fatigue syndrome.
Oh, you've had enough of COVID.
No, I don't mean that. I mean, my body has been, like, fatigued for, like, since I got the second shot.
Huh, that's interesting.
And I don't know if it's a reaction to the COVID shot or the, you know, because I've just felt
because the COVID fatigue that they're actually referring to is people
I'm fed up with it. No, I mean a totally different, like, my energy level because of getting that shot has gone down a little bit.
Huh. Well,
I don't know if that's a long-term thing from the vaccine or not, but I've kind of been just blah ever since I got that vaccine, the second vaccine. I've been kind of blah.
Yeah. Well, I kind of think that could be in your head. But, you know, we haven't been together for
thanks,
a while.
Mom.
Yeah. We haven't been together for a while because you were fishing and I had Pam Sakes with me.
Yes.
And then I went away for 2 weeks to do my Grandternity leave, the end of my Grandternity leave.
God, when does it end?
And you had Pam with you those 2 days. So I got to go and tell you a couple of funny things that while I was listening to the podcast from you and Pam. So you were talking about how, you know, you in the morning, you're always checking the weather as you're getting dressed. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, you're modern Orthodox, and you wear the same thing every morning. So you wear a white shirt with black pants.
No, I don't.
Well, every time I've ever seen you, you're in white shirt and black.
These are blue pants.
Okay.
These are blue pants. I do wear a white shirt, but I wear other colored shirts, too. And I don't wear all – I know I have all kinds of different colored pants for my suit.
Well, then I stand corrected.
No, I have, 15 to 20 suits.
Okay, well, I stand corrected.
Like gray and blue and black.
I was thinking, how hard it is.
No, it's like, we're not in shtissel here. I mean, come on, man. This isn't shtissel. I'm not wearing the same thing every day.
Well, we are going to be interrupted here pretty soon because we're going to start our interviews. And our first interview is with Ofra Weisberg.
Right.
And she's being honored for teaching for 50 years at Rockwern, and it was formerly Yavna. In the meantime, we also have coming up, in the next couple of weeks, we have Ron Richards is coming on May 12th to discuss some of the hidden tours and treasures of Cincinnati.
Well, there's a lot of stuff out there, and he's an expert on it. And it's really fascinating. We actually should do a tour again, rent a bus and stuff, because he's taking people on them. I've been on a couple of them.
They could be,
it's really
like the universities who sponsor tours. Yours could be a tour from Rockwern.
Well,
I mean, not Rockwern. I'm sorry. I'm thinking Rockwern's on my mind. I'm thinking from the American Israelite. And then we also have coming up is Mr. Alan Weiner, who's a former teacher of thousands of bar and bat mitzvah yelodim, and he's coming on May 18th. And speaking of bar mitzvahs, how's our future bar mitzvah boy you for in 11 years from now? Have you set your date yet?
Oh, yeah. I'm working on it religiously.
Yeah. You know, either Stephanie or I have to give the parent speech. Someone has to give your parent speech for you.
Goodness gracious. All right. Well, Stephanie would give the parent speech, not you.
Well, I should, get a Leah, maybe.
You might get, you can't get one at Shari Torah.
Well, then you'll have it at Adith, so I could have an Aaliyah.
I might have two of them then.
Okay.
But I'm not going to be reading the Hebrew. It's my brain doesn't work that well.
Well, maybe Mr. Weiner can work with you. When I left him the other day, he said, I could teach you. I could teach you. I said, I don't know. Anyway,
he said he could teach you?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't know. I've tried for 60 years. But also, I want to correct one thing that I said last week on the podcast. I was talking about Rabbi Lorge of blessed memory.
Right.
And I said that Rabbi Lorge was the great-grandfather of Rabbi Spolansky. And actually, he's her grandfather. So I just wanted to clear that up, that Rabbi Lorge's daughter was Greta Spolansky, who was married to Rabbi Donald Spolansky. And therefore, he is just her grandfather, not her great-grandfather. So
that correction is now noted.
Important corrections.
Now noted. Yes, yes. So how long until we have to go to, I think we're almost ready, right?
Well, I'm waiting for her to come on, but we can, you know, chat a little bit what's going on. Today is, well, today is April 28th, and tomorrow is Thursday, April 29th, and I want to give a mazel tov to my friend Colleen, who is turning 70 years young tomorrow. She's my good friend. I have spent the week getting Bella Card set up and brought to the gym ahead of time for her with treats and for everyone in the gym to know that she is 70 years old.
Are these dog treats?
No, no. That she gets the Bella Card, you know, talking about like one bitch to another or you're an old bitch. Or today the card read something to the effect that I consulted with the stars to try and figure out how old she was. And what it was a quote from Brigitte Bardot, who said, you have to live the life you have, you know, whatever age you are at that point.
So now, if she was a, well, in dog years, she'd be 10.
640. No, she's 7 times 70 or 490. She'd be 490 years old. And that was one of, that's the last
now,
card.
How old is?
The last card was actually, you know, don't worry about being 70. I'm
six, in dog years, you'd 490
years old.
Yeah, okay. So now, how old is Bella in human years?
She's 12. She just turned 12. So she was a bat mitzvah the other day.
We didn't know about the bat mitzvah.
Yeah, she's a bat mitzvah.
She should come into onto the show and bark into the microphone, and we should put her on the show.
Yes, we should.
So now, if she's 12, that would mean she'd be 84.
Yes, 12 times 7 is 84, yes.
Yeah. So we need to see how she's doing and take care of her, you know.
Yes, we do. Right now she's getting ready. She's getting ready for some spring cards she has to make. She's been posing.
Spring cards.
Yeah, she's been posing in some different outfits for me, and we're getting ready.
We do love the Bella.
We do. Yeah. Well, we're going to take a break here, and when we get back, we are going to have Mrs. Ofra Weisberg with us. Hi, everyone. We're back, and we would like to welcome on the podcast Mrs. Ofra Weisberg. And she's,
thank you.
Ted and I are so honored to have you on our podcast with us. And, you know, you've been a teacher for 61 years, and you arrived in Cincinnati in 1967, not in 1971, as I had written in my column, because I kind of deduce that. But you were living in Chicago with your husband, the late Rabbi Dr. David Weisberg of blessed memory, and he was at the University of Chicago at the Oriental Institute studying ancient tablets. And in 1967, he was offered a great opportunity to connect with HUC. And while he was working with Oriental antiquity, he decided to also pursue the rabbinate. And because as a younger man, he had studied at Orthodox yeshivas in New York. So studying for the rabbinate was not new for him. And yet prior to this time, he had never sought the designation of rabbi. And from his studies at HUC, he was ordained in 1977. And after you arrived here and you came to look at Cincinnati, you know, what did you think of our community when you first got here? What did you come back and tell your family when you first arrived in Cincinnati?
Well, we first arrived in Cincinnati at the airport. And at the airport at that time was a small airport. And we were a little surprised that we were landing in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Because Kentucky to us was another world. And as we exited the airport, there was an awning, a red and white striped awning, where today we have roads and overpasses and such. But this was just a very warm and small-time feeling. But Kentucky really got our attention. We said, hey, we are almost going to be living almost in Kentucky. So for New Yorkers, that was strange.
Yeah.
I Okay, so Ted's here. I'm here, Ted. And
hi, Ted.
Hello. I wanted to ask you, after you moved here, did you start teaching at Yavna, or back then it was Yavna, that first fall semester? Right. You came.
No, I did not. At the first years when we were here, I was busy with little kids. And I was a pretty devoted mother and homemaker. And teaching was not part of my life at that point at all. But I had been approached by Frady Kramer. Now, I don't know if that's a name familiar to you, but in the days of the Yavna Day School, especially the days when we were still on Summit Road, she was a guiding spirit in the school. And she said, how about coming and teaching at Yavna? And I said, as soon as my kids are in school, let's talk about it. So as soon as I registered, I guess it was 1971, I registered all the kids in school. She came up to me and she said, you promised. So you might think I jumped at the opportunity, but I was a little bit overwhelmed by the thought of having both jobs of teaching and homemaking at the same time. Could I do both of those things? But I did take the plunge and I loved it. So,
all right. So, at the time, did you think that you were going to remain in Cincinnati? Did you ever think your life would unfold that you would be teaching for the next 60 years in Cincinnati?
I did not. Had you asked me, where will you be in 50, 60 years? I would have said, I'm sitting home, rocking in a rocking chair, you know, reading books, I don't know, taking walks. Mm-hmm. I would not have anticipated that.
Well, you know, let's back up the timeline a bit. You know, I'm sure a lot of folks pronounce your name Oprah, lies in Oprah Wine, you know, Oprah Winfrey. But your name is really Oprah with a pet.
No, actually, it is with a Fay.
It
could look like it was, it is. And it's Oprah in Hebrew means a deer, baby deer, a female. And I was named after my paternal grandfather who died just a few months before I was born. And his name was Fee. Fee means a deer.
Okay.
And my parents kind of made that connection because they liked the name Oprah. Now, you should remember that we were all living in Israel at that time. Uh-huh. I was born in Israel and Hebrew was my first language.
Wow.
And Oprah was a very acceptable name. When I came to the United States, it was a problem because it was so foreign to American ears.
Right, yeah. English speakers, right.
Yeah, it was a strange name. And it was very uncomfortable for me to tell people what my name was because the reaction was, what? What? You never heard that. And that was because of that, I always gave my kids names that worked in English and in Hebrew.
Yeah.
So they all can be comfortable either wherever they end up.
Right.
So you're a seventh generation Sabra, and your mother Dina Manschill was the sixth generation. So tell us the origin of your family and where they came from.
Okay, let's see. Well, my mother's family came from Russia years before because she was already sixth generation. And they were builders, contractors and builders. And a lot of the buildings in Jerusalem and around Israel have their name on it, the Man Berman. Yeah, you can see it. My father was born in New York. His parents came from Poland, both of them came as children, as young children from Poland. And he was born in New York and educated in New York and studied with a group with a rabbi who inspired all of that little, everyone in that group with Zionism. So one member of that group, I don't know if this will be of interest to people. One member of that group, David Shainberg, was from Memphis, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And he wanted desperately to live in Israel, go to Israel. Well, of course, it was Palestine at that point. Mm-hmm. And he joined the Hebron Yeshiva. He really went on with it. Even though his family, very Jewish, were not Orthodox, but he somehow was inspired and went to the Hebron Yeshiva. And my father and he, to this day, we have letters here and there from both of them where they corresponded. My father kept in touch with him, and terribly sadly, David Shainberg was killed in the Hebron massacre in 1929. Oy. I think it was August of 19.
August 24th. It was a Saturday. It was a Saturday.
It was a horrible time. Yeah.
Yeah. So after I had talked, I looked into that. It's quite a tragedy, and maybe with you, you can explain a little bit to our listeners what was the Hebron, if they don't know, because it was quite a tragedy in Jewish history.
Right. There was a small community of Jews living in Hebron at that time. That's the 20s and into the, well, the 20s, yeah, I think we'd have to say.
It was the 1920s, yes.
Right. And there... I read somewhere 800 people lived there, and quite peacefully for a while.
Yes, they were good something friends with their neighbors.
Something ignited them. Yeah. Something ignited the Arabs at that point. And they attacked not only the Hebron Yeshiva, they attacked private homes there too, but all the students, just about all of them, 28 students were killed. Many of them were Americans, Canadians, but they came from all over, I think.
Yeah, there was 67 that died and 58 that were injured. And the motive, according to Wikipedia, my source for all information, was that rumors were that the Jews were going to be slaughtering Muslims in Jerusalem. And also that they were going to be marching into the dome and taking it over. So that's what instigated it. And the police there, who had only the police of Hebron, had one Jewish policeman, and the rest were Arabs, and there was a few British. But they stood by and did not help. Now, the other part of the story is, according to the Arabs, some of the good Arabs in the town did take the Jews in, but there was 67 people, and among them was 2-year-olds and 5-year-olds and 12-year-olds. It was a sad history. But then tell us what this did to motivate your father to move to Israel?
Well, when he learned about the Hebron Yeshiva massacre and his friend, very close friend, had died there, he vowed that he was going to eventually go on Aliyah, which he did in the 30s, early 30s. He met my mother. They got married. I was born there, and they had every intention of remaining until World War II was breaking out in Europe.
Right.
And Rommel was coming through North Africa. There was fear that he would get to what was then Palestine. Mm. And Americans were called back. They all were said calls to return to the United States. Now, you couldn't come through the Atlantic at that time because there were submarines. And we apparently spent 3 months on a Dutch ship going around the world through the Panama Canal.
Wow.
Ended up in America. And because my mother liked a warm climate, we ended up in Miami Beach. Miami Beach was a little town at that time. And that was what brought me here. My history would have been totally different,
right.
I think.
There was quite an act of sacrifice on the part of your father, very big act of sacrifice to go to Israel to replace his friend there. It's a big act of sacrifice. So
right. Yeah, and he was a Zionist. He loved Israel. We did try to go back in 1950. I mean, there was a war here. There was, you know, the World War II, and then there was trouble in Israel. There was the war of independence. And we went back for a year in 1950, but the government was so socialistic. And my father loved Israel, but he was a capitalist. And he couldn't get things going. So we returned here. And after years, I ended up at school in New York, a high school. And that's where I met my husband.
Okay.
Ramaz, the upper school. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
all right, so
we graduated together. He went to Columbia. I went to Barnard. We were married in 1958.
That's the same year my parents were married.
That was the day I was born. That was when I was born.
That makes sense. Right. That makes good sense. Yes.
All right, so together with Rabbi Dr. Weisberg, you had four children.
Tell us about your four children and your grandchildren.
Well, four children. I have one living in New York, one in Boston, and two are in Israel right now. I'm very proud of them. They are products of Yavne Day School, and Yavne made a tremendous impact on them. I think they would say of all their educational experiences, Yavne was the most definitive and most impactful and most meaningful, because they've all remained very close wherever they were to the Jewish communities and leaders in the community.
Right.
So I'm very proud of them. Very proud of them.
Wonderful.
And
was your home bilingual when they were growing up? Did you speak both Hebrew and English to them the whole time?
I'm embarrassed to say we spoke English. It's very hard to go against the flow. Very hard.
Okay.
But they speak Hebrew very. They've all spent a year or more than a year in Israel studying either in high school, elementary school, college. It's been very much Israel. The Israel experience has been very much part of their lives.
All right.
And important. Yeah.
So in addition to, you have a BA from Barnard in sociology and education. You've earned a master's in education from Cincinnati Xavier University.
Yes, I do. Very proud of both.
Yeah.
And how old were your children when you went back to school and finished up your degrees?
They were in elementary school. So I would say they were probably in the early elementary school and high school. Yeah. The older two were in high school. The other one was at Yavne, and the younger two were at Yavne.
Wonderful.
And I did go back. Xavier has a very convenient program for people who are teachers, but teaching during the day, and you can get your degree by going after school.
Oh, that's
right.
Nice.
And,
so you began as a kindergarten teacher, and then you were a first grade teacher, and that's where I met you. And then after 28 years, you took over the principalship of Judaic Studies. Did you teach while you were also the principal?
I didn't have a class, but I taught a lot.
And
I remember having a whole program that I wanted to do about the prayer, the Amidah, the 18th. And I was anxious to inspire the kids with the importance of it and its construction. So I used to try to get into the classrooms and do that with them. But my main commitment was to being in the administration at that point.
And so you're ending your career. You were teaching third grade in Hebrew and Judaic studies. Are you still teaching, or is this officially it now after this year?
Officially, as of January 1st, 2021, I have retired. I have taught every grade level in the course of my years there, except second grade. I don't know how I missed that one. I never taught second grade. But even through the eighth grade, I had years when I was teaching here and there and filling in. So I've had gone all through the school. But I began third grade teaching in New York at the Ramaz School.
Oh,
and
okay.
And ended up at Rockburn in third grade.
Okay.
So I thought,
you've gone full circle.
Yeah.
I did, right. The two bookends.
Yeah.
Like,
do you have any idea how many students you have taught? Yeah. And are any of your students that are former students famous or celebrities?
Wow, I don't know. I really don't.
Good question.
That's a good question, because some years I taught, there were like 20 kids, two classes of 20 or so.
That's 40.
And then there were a lot of years when it was just one class of, about 20.
Right.
So I'd have to sit down and do the math. But,
well, you can get back to us on that.
Okay.
So over the last 50 years, actually 60 years.
61, yeah.
Right. What sort of changes have you witnessed both in the students and the parents in teaching?
Well, in the students, teaching has become much more like an open, flexible program. And the first years I taught in a classroom, there were 25 desks, and they were connected in five rows of five. There were 25 in the class,
mm-hmm.
And they were connected so that the janitor could move five desks at a time and sweep and then put them back without moving 25. And that was fine. They thought that was fine. I mean, now you would never see stationary desks. Everything is movable, flexible, and so there's much more of a flow in the classroom.
Hmm.
So that is a difference. We did not know so much about kids who are on the spectrum. We did know about discipline problems, behavior problems. There were kids on medication, but we weren't so well educated yet.
Right.
In the early years, about what's going on and how to solve these problems in the best possible way for the students and the teachers and the classroom.
Right.
So that is a big change. A teacher who was teaching in 1960 would be surprised to walk into a classroom now in 2020, 2021.
Yeah.
It would look different. It would look different.
And what about the parents? Have you seen a change in parents?
Change in parents, also slight change. Well, I'll tell you that originally parents, when we had parent-teacher conferences, it was only the moms who came. It was so unusual to see a father take time off and come for a conference. More recently, it's very unusual to have a conference without the father.
Hmm.
Fathers are just much more involved, and it's much more expected and accepted that fathers will take time off from whatever else they were doing and come in and have a discussion about how their kids are doing. So that is a difference. And parents are much more involved in their...
Nowadays, yeah.
It just is much more, much more of a presence. Until the COVID attack, they were much more in the school building a lot. And so much more interaction. I think that would be something that anyone who would jump from a classroom in the 60s to a classroom in the 20s now would be struck by.
Right. We wanted now you're being honored by Rockwern for your teaching, and that's coming up with that's Rockwern Alive. And what day is that, Julie?
It's It's a Sunday May 23rd.
Okay. And you're being honored for all your years of teaching. And
right.
We want to congratulate you and a mazel tov. And we want to thank you. And we want to thank you for coming on our podcast and coming on the show. And
thank you so much.
I had a personal experience because you were Rachel's teacher. And then Julie, Julie had her her children there. And so we've known you for years and years. And you're one of our favorite people. We just want to tell you that. You're one of our favorite people. And
thank you.
And then Rockwern is actually acknowledging that and honoring you with this year. And we just want to thank you for coming on the show. And thank you for your time.
It means a lot to us. Yeah. We really
thank you. Thank you so much. It's a great honor. I think I got more out of this than I gave. What I got out was multiple times of what I put in. Mm. And it just defined me, my teaching career. Besides being a mother and a wife, that my teaching really defined me as a person.
That's beautiful. That's really, really beautiful.
Wonderful. Wonderful. All right.
I love it.
Okay.
Well, we wish you well, and we look forward to joining you at Rockwern Alive. We really
do. We'll be there. We'll be there covering
We'll be there watching them. Okay. Thank you again, Mrs. Weisberg.
Thank you.
Have a great
day. Thank you, Julie. Thank you.
Okay.
Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now, our second interview with Rabbi Baum.
So we're back, and you know, Ted, there's a special institution in Cincinnati that is dear to both you and I.
Yep.
Though we were both raised Jewish in Jewish homes, and we both went to great public schools, and there are great public schools in Cincinnati. We both chose to send our children to, at the time, Yavne Day School, is today Rockwern. And today we are fortunate to be speaking with Rabbi Laura Baum, the head of school at Rockwern Academy. Welcome, Rabbi Laura Baum.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here with you.
So just a little bit of background about Rabbi Baum. Rabbi Baum, received her BA in psychology from Yale in 2001. And in 2008, she was ordained and earned a Master's of Arts in Hebrew Letters at HUC in Cincinnati, after which in 2012, Rabbi Baum earned an MBA from Xavier University. Hailing from the East Coast and prior to coming to Rockwern, Rabbi Baum was Associate Vice President of Learning and Engagement and Combined Jewish Philanthropies in Boston. There, Rabbi Baum led the largest division of the Planning Department, where she was responsible for allocating $18 million to the community and for developing, overseeing, and implementing a comprehensive strategy to connect people to Jewish life, learning, and community. From 2008 to 15, Rabbi Baum served as a rabbi of Congregation Beth Adam here in Cincinnati. While there, she built her rabbinate outside the box and founded ourjewishcommunity.org, which reached hundreds of thousands of people around the world. An expert on changing needs of the Jewish community, Rabbi Baum created an innovative model for engaging those seeking a new way to connect to Judaism. In 2010, she was named by The Forward as one of the 50 most influential female rabbis in America. She is a Rabbis Without Borders Fellow and a Wexner Field Fellow. Her writing and work have been featured on CNN, The Jerusalem Post, NPR, and The New York Times. In 2018, Rabbi Laura Baum joined Rockwern Academy as head of school. In addition to helping to raise the children of Rockwern Academy, she and her husband, chemistry professor Dr. Scott Tremaine, have two children of their own. Wow. Rabbi Baum.
Thank you. Thanks for that introduction.
I know you're a Yalie, but where did you grow up?
About 10 minutes from Yale in North Haven, Connecticut.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Very, very nice. So you still have family back there?
I do, although they've also kind of ended up in various places around the country since then, but some, yeah.
Okay.
Tell us about Rockwern Alive, and we know that Rockwern Academy was founded in 1952 as Yavne Day School, community Jewish day school, open to all Jewish children throughout the Cincinnati area. It was and is dedicated to a pluralistic ideology. welcoming all denominations and Jewish families, affiliated or unaffiliated. What more can you tell us about the founding of Rockwern Yavne? And where did the idea begin to have a progressive Jewish day school in Cincinnati? And who were the founding families?
Yeah, so Yavne was founded in 1952. So next year we'll be celebrating our 70th year, which is amazing. There were several founding families that made the school possible. The original group, as I understand it, was Joseph Gutmann and Samuel Schmidt and Saul Richman, Ben Sion Dahl, and Morris Weintraub, who became Yavne's first president. But there were also several other groups who came in later who we also consider among our founding families and are very grateful for. And I think the motivation was really that there were Orthodox options in Cincinnati at Chofetz Chaim and Talmud Torah. But there were people like the founders of Yavne who wanted to create something different. They wanted a Jewish day school with Zionist values. Some of the founding families didn't belong to synagogues themselves, but they knew the importance of a Jewish education, and they knew the importance of having the opportunity to celebrate the traditions of Judaism and to celebrate its culture. And so a group of parents came together who were dedicated to really creating a community school that was, in their words, dedicated to the ideology of compromising among denominations. And I would add, celebrating that there are diverse ways to be part of the Jewish community. And so they created something different than just having Orthodox options in the city. And they made it the case that there was a community school that followed the curriculum then of the Cincinnati Public Schools, but really distinguished itself by offering small class sizes and celebrating traditions and holidays related to Judaism.
Wow. Yeah.
And plus probably Hebrew and, you know, a history of Israel and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, very nice.
Jewish people and all that stuff too.
So, you know, I read in the Rockwern brochure that Rockwern Academy is an ISACS accredited school.
Isaacs.
You know, yeah. So what is an Isaacs school and what makes Rockwern unique in terms of private schools and Jewish day schools?
Yeah, so Rockwern receives its accreditation, as you said, from Isaacs, which is a process we go through every 7 years. Mm. And it's a really wonderful opportunity because what it means is that there's an outside set of eyes, both looking at what we're doing and encouraging our staff to set aside time for reflection and planning and to getting input from all of our employees, all of our families, all of our key stakeholders. And so having that accreditation is a seal of approval that peer reviewers from around the country are saying that our school meets the standards of a top independent school in every possible way, from educational to operational. And so for us, we're really proud, you know, to be a Jewish day school that's also recognized as an independent school that's doing the things that other independent schools should be doing as well. And I think what really makes Rockwern special is that we combine a wonderful general studies education. Our students go on to be tremendously successful in junior highs and high schools throughout the Cincinnati area. Mm-hmm. And we can do that while combining it with a Jewish education, with the gift of a second language, starting in preschool and running all the way through the grades, and with a sense of also helping students think through their relationship to Judaism and who they are becoming as people and citizens in the world, and give them tech study skills and also give them a Jewish community that loves and nurtures them and really becomes a home away from home for them.
So what grades are taught at, you know, from beginning to end, what grades are taught at Rockwern?
Yeah, so we have students as young as toddlers. We actually have students coming in the fall who will only be 12 months old.
Wow.
And then we go through eighth grade. Some years we don't have enough interest in having a seventh and eighth grade class. So this year our oldest class is sixth grade. But we certainly can provide and aspire to provide a seventh and eighth grade experience for students as well.
You know, Rockrun has what promises to be an amazing virtual event called Rockrun Alive on Sunday, May 23rd at 7 p.m., and it's being emceed by Randy Zuckerberg, former director of marketing and spokesperson for Facebook, and sister of Mark Zuckerberg, and musical guest, the folk pop trio Distant Cousins. And, of course, as we know, we've already finished our interview right. with Mrs. Ofra Weisberg for her 50 years of teaching.
61.
Well, she's 61 years of teaching, but she's taught for 50 years at Rockrun Yavna. What else can you tell us about what we can expect to see and feel and hear during this event?
Well, it is going to be an amazing party. I know many of us are zoomed out from having been online this year, but I promise that this event on May 23rd will be very different. I've actually known Randy Zuckerberg for many years from when I used to run an online congregation and she worked at Facebook, and I've gotten to know her and her family. She's a two-time Tony winner. I saw her perform in Rock of Ages on Broadway. She'll be singing a song for us at Rockrun Alive and has a really beautiful voice,
that
really lovely connection to Judaism. She's just super talented. And Distant Cousins is this amazing folk pop trio. And we spent a group of, I think 35 of us spent time on a Sunday earlier this month writing a song for Ofra Weisberg. We all recorded our parts for that song, and we'll be presenting that to Ofra as a gift to her on May 23rd. But really, she is the gift to our community and all that she has done. We have a raffle planned, raffling off a Peloton bike and an evening out in Covington, an overnight, and $1,000 of landscaping and a basketball hoop. We have wonderful event chairs. We are going to add in some fun activities. People can attend for free. We encourage people to sign up. And if they'd like to purchase a package, they can purchase a nosh box of snacks for the evening to accompany them from a local caterer. And some wine and a musical instrument and various things that are available as options. And so we're hoping that people will participate fully in those ways. There are opportunities to sponsor the event for people who want to support Rockrun and or make a gift specifically in honor of Ofra Weisberg. So it's going to be a pretty happening party, less than an hour, and a really, really fun evening.
How can our listeners that are listening to the podcast and our listeners generally, how do they sign up for Rockrun Alive?
So we have a website with all the details about Rockrun Alive and a chance to sign up. And you can go to rockrunacademy.org/alive.
Okay. Anyway, you know, I hope you've listened to some of our podcasts and heard how much Ted has actually been praising you, because we've heard how well Rockrun has done during COVID. And you should definitely be commended. And what was your secret to keeping Rockrun alive during COVID?
I think our secret during COVID is our secret all of the time, which is this is an amazing place with an amazing community. So our secret getting us through COVID was our amazing dedicated staff, our amazing families and community, our small class sizes, the fact that our students already had access to technology and knew how to use it. And we have teachers who have access to professional development and could pivot their teaching styles on a moment's notice as they needed to last spring and headed into this year. So there are a lot of things that make Jewish Day School extraordinary. And I truly believe that those things just equipped us so well heading into a pandemic to be able to respond and to keep our students healthy and safe, which is always our first priority. And on top of that, to make sure that they feel nurtured and supported in who they are and in their academic journeys as well.
All right.
I
just want to say one thing. You know, both Ted and I and my family and, of course, my daughter, Melissa, who is quoted, and Ted doesn't like when I talk about my kids, but I'm going to talk about it here. You know, she wrote once that she is who she is today because of her years at Yavin. And I have to tell you, I strongly believe that for both Ted and I, our children and our children's classmates, that is so true. And I am sure this is going to continue long into the future with your support. So,
So we want to thank you for coming on the show, and you've been a great interview and doing a great job. And we also want to highlight again, so on Sunday, May 23rd at 7 o'clock is Rockrun Alive, and everyone should go and participate and support Rockwarn, as we have for many these many years and will for many, many years to come. So,
thank you again, Rabbi Baum. Thank we really appreciate your time. Yep. We look forward to seeing you on May 23rd at Rockwarn Alive.
Wonderful. I really appreciate the opportunity to be with you today and to tell everyone about Rockwarn Alive and Rockwarn.
Thank
Very
you.
Good. Very
be
good.
Well.
Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye.
Thanks, you
All
too.
Right.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We are back, and those were great interviews with Mrs. Ofra Weisberg and Rabbi Laura Baum, and I certainly look forward to Rockwarn Alive. I know I've signed up our family, and I hope that everybody else signs up as well.
On page one is an article about the Atara students explore the power of words, and you explained to me what this was about. Would you explain it to our listeners?
All right, so during the year, they have a project for all the students that culminates at the end of the year, and this year it's Words Build Worlds. And in the Torah, it talks about that Hashem, when he spoke, the world came into being. And without words, it didn't come into being. Like, it wasn't a thought. It wasn't an idea. It was an action. And the action was God said, you know, creation and let there be light. And then let, you know, the first day of creation, the second day, third day, fourth day, and all that stuff came into being because of God's, Hashem's words. And so they're keying on that, and they had an exhibit from what they put together for the entire year on April 20 and 21 of this year. And Carol went to the exhibit, and there's photos of it, and then there's be more on their webs on our website of how the power of words affects us. And it's really interesting. I mean,
it sounds like it is. It sounds like, in fact, in the article, it talks about how there was actually some wait. People had to wait in line a little bit because there was enough people that they had to do one family at a time, and that there was a line that you know that formed. So that's pretty interesting. Yeah. You know, on page three, you are now looking for an assistant editor part time, and you're also looking for an accounting bookkeeping. You know, a lot of kids are graduating in the next month, and this is a great opportunity for someone who is in accounting and maybe still going to school part time.
Yes.
Someone in business maybe going to school part time.
Yes.
As far as the assistant editor or someone who's got an interest in writing, I know that we've had a number of young people who have started out their careers writing here.
Right.
It's good experience. You do follow, I believe you follow the New York Times. Writing, I think that's what
style.
So it's a great, especially if they have dreams of going to the New York Times.
Yes, from the American Israelite.
From the American
the oldest Jewish newspaper in America.
To the most liberal newspaper in the United States would be
a perfect segue. That would be a disaster for them.
But also,
an absolute disaster, and you and your liberal pals. But
anyway. So those are two jobs that are open. They're both part-time.
Well, so we need to give you a little back. So Jean Alyssa, graduated last year and then came here, and she worked here up until about a month ago, and then she got a new job, full-time job, at a, I think she's...
in a wedding facility in Kentucky.
Well, and also she's doing design work, too.
Because she's an artist. Yeah.
She's a graphic designer by trade, and so she got a full-time job, so that job now became open. And then Judy, a longtime employee, the longtime...
She lasted here longer than
Den, I. She was like Den Mother.
Yeah.
She was like the Den Mother here at the paper for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. And she retired to Florida. So she picked up one day.
Yeah, well, she came here after it took you a long time to fill the position after you fired me. And then came Judy, and she stayed for a long time. And
you got sacked.
Yeah, I got sacked.
Got sacked, all right.
And you kept Judy, but I saw her put you in your place a number. I heard it. I walked in a couple times, and she gave it to you, but good. And I was very proud of her. She wasn't afraid of getting fired by you.
I wasn't going to fire her.
Oh, yeah, you know.
No, I wasn't going to fire
her. I know, she wasn't afraid of you.
No, she wasn't.
She was good. She was very, very good. Because I came in.
Just a big teddy bear.
So I came in a couple times to substitute for her, and I did notice that she did a way better job than me. She was real organized. She was very efficient. She knew her bookkeeping skills and her, I could tell you.
The company ran smoothly for many, many years because of her.
Thanks to her. So on page four, we have our community calendar, and there's a couple of interesting things. On Saturday, May 1st, there's the Empty Nesters hike.
Right.
That sounds pretty good in DeVue Park with Wise Temple.
Yeah.
What's not on here that I've noticed is on Sunday, May 2nd, it's the Edith Israel drive-through. It's like the end of school year concert. You come through on your car, and there's going to be a concert with Josh Warshawski, and you can also get... Barry and I have ordered a box lunch. We're getting the veggie burger with chips and stuff.
Oh, boy, veggie burger.
Yeah, and then
do you get a little mustard? Do you get mustard and ketchup on your veggie
sure,
burger?
Sure, you treat them just do like, you? Yeah, and you can get a hot dog or you can get a regular hamburger,
what kind of,
too.
Wait a minute, a vegetarian hot dog?
I don't know. I think those are probably real because they're having real hamburgers, too. But they're kosher. You know it's going to be kosher. Yeah, so anyone who's kosher, this is a place for you to go. And also, there's a raffle, and I bought raffle tickets, too. So I have big hopes of winning.
What do you win in a raffle?
There was like a spa sort of a package where you got creams and stuff. There was
lotions.
Lotions and creams,
Lotions and creams. Like, you know, you could become a lotion and cream kind
of
guy.
Yeah, I bid on all of them. It's kind of slipped my mind. I bid on all of them, but there was one that just didn't interest me. But there was a lot of good choices, so I'm looking forward to being a winner.
Any word yet on when Addith will be reopening and you'll have services there?
Well, I did talk to Rabbi Benjamin Scheidel, and he did talk a little bit about how they are meeting and getting in preparation and beginning to think about opening up, which is nice.
Well, are they going to? They need to have like a daily minion. They used to have a daily minion.
It's
every
all
night.
On Facebook. You do it on Facebook via Zoom, but I think they're getting. I think Addith has taken a very strong approach of being very proactive and protective of their congregants. So I think that's very good. But I think in the next few weeks you might be hearing what they're planning on doing. And I hope they put it in the Israelites so that everyone knows.
So yesterday the CDC put out
no mass outside, which is great because I'm actually hosting a shower for our beloved Pam Sakes' son, Kevin, and his bride, Sarah Kuhn. We're doing a shower. It's only 15 people. It's 15 hostesses, and we're doing it outside.
She's a Kuhn. Now, K-U-H-N or K-O-O-N?
K-U-H-N.
Now, so Jerry Garcia was married to a Kuhn.
Oh, well, maybe she's related. Wouldn't that be cool?
Wouldn't that be related?
We'll have to ask Pam.
To Jerry Garcia's, I think his second wife.
That's very, very cool. I like Jerry Garcia.
Yeah. I know you do. Yeah. You're a big Deadhead yourself.
Yeah. So
we need to remind everybody that tomorrow night is Lag BaOmer, and there's a bonfire.
There's one, it says here in Adat, but it's Addith Bonfire on Wednesday.
That's next Wednesday, but there's a bonfire tomorrow night at Wise Temple for the scouts.
Oh, fun. Okay.
Because somebody sent me the email to go. Oh, Liz Vogel's son, Sam, is a scout.
Is a scout. I was a Girl Scout through high school.
I was a Boy Scout.
I was a Girl Scout.
Yeah, I was a Boy Scout, yeah.
Yeah, and also, just for anyone who might have an issue, I know my Bella has a little bit of a bladder issue, but on Tuesday, May 4th, there's overall bladder health from 5:30 to 7 at Jewish Hospital, courtesy of Mercy Health, but it's online.
Okay, you don't want to.
So if you're learning about bladder health and it's a virtual online, you can actually put it on mute and go use the bathroom during the.
Okay, we don't need to know about your personal hygiene habits and all that.
I'm saying in general.
Well, who goes and puts it on mute and goes to the? I never even thought of such a thing.
Oh, please! They found in the Supreme Court when Zoom was started that one of the people in the Supreme Court actually forgot to turn their Zoom on mute and went and flushed the toilet.
Okay. All right, so on page 6, we have What is Lag BaOmer?
Yep.
And it's a minor holiday that occurs on the 33rd day of the counting of the Omer during the 49-day period between Passover and Shavuot. And so it's a break from the semi-morning of the Omer. And I don't usually, you can also now hold weddings, you can get a haircut, you can light bonfires. I don't listen to music for the at least up until Lag BaOmer.
Yeah.
I listen to talk radio in the car, or I listen to, I've been listening to Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson.
Well, you're still
fascinating.
You're also still in mourning for your mother, so isn't there a music issue with that as well? Is that for a whole year, or is it just the 30 days?
Okay, you're allowed to listen to music by yourself, but you're not allowed to go listen to live music.
Okay.
That's my understanding of it. So, and I've got to listen to, my dad and Fish and all my other bands that I love.
That's the Grateful Dead. You're not listening to Dead.
No.
Yeah,
you're listening to the Grateful Dead and the Fish.
And not to the fish that you go fishing for.
No, you're listening
to the PHISH, the band Fish.
Yes.
You got to clarify that because
I do. Yeah. Well, I speak in, just everybody knows what I'm talking about, but obviously don't. So you have to explain it to them.
In hip lingo.
Yes, I am definitely Mr. Hipster.
This paper today is kind of like an educational version of the Israelite, because on page 7, then you have something, what's an upshurnish? That's when they cut the young boy's hair. And actually, I discussed it with my kids. Are you going to maybe let Gavi grow his hair long and wait until he's 3 years. I think it's kind of cool. All so right. We'll see what they do. You know, right now his hair is coming in red, and I even showed his picture to YY. You know,
my dad was
a redhead. Before he turned white,
it skipped. It skipped a generation.
So right now his hair is red and he's got blue eyes. In fact, I showed him to YY. You know, our beloved bagel man.
Right.
And he said, my goodness, he could be one of my kids because he's got the red hair and the blue eyes. So
I just gave YY a set of golf clubs.
Okay.
And I expect him to be out there hacking away soon enough.
Has he ever played golf?
Never played, but okay. I had an extra set. And I said, you can use these to learn how to play. But when you get a new set, you know, when you actually get good, he's going to want to buy his own set. And I said,
well, plus he's not the same height as you. Isn't golf clubs based on your height, too? No? I thought it was a height.
No, you can always choke up.
Okay.
Always choke up. I mean, I always get clubs that are plus 1 inch. You know, the shaft is a little bit longer because I like to grip it a certain way. And so when you're swinging, you want it a little bit. But his would be a little bit shorter than mine. But you can get them custom made and all that kind of stuff. So he's going to start playing golf now.
Okay, well, that sounds pretty cool.
He's going to become a golfer.
I'm interested to hear how he.
And I told him he can come with me,
Is he going to wear those shorts like you do and put the Three Stooges picture up where all you guys are with the shorts and the?
Yes. Yes. I used to have that Three Stooges picture, but I got rid of it.
Well, you don't just have to look at the Israelite every year when you do that golf outing, and you all look like the Four Stooges, you and your buddy
Wait a minute now.
So on page 8,
there's some Deutsches.
We have Chaim Deutsch, and we have Representative Ted Deutsch, who I actually took out to lunch when he was here in 2012 running when we were working.
But he is a Deutsch without an S.
Right.
So there's Deutsches without
and
the S.
And he's also a Ted Deutsch.
Ted Deutsch.
He's a nice guy. He really is. I took him out to lunch. I think Sonny Sakes might have been with us at that lunch as well. Mm-hmm. And then this Chaim is in a little bit of trouble.
He's in some trouble.
He's pleaded guilty to tax fraud.
Yes, that's never good. Anyway, down at the bottom.
Both of these guys are Democrats.
Yes, they're both Democrats.
You were at one point, you were a Democrat growing up.
Yeah, okay. So, always going to bring that up,
don't you? I want you all to read these two Ted Deutsch Democrat articles.
And Chaim Deutsch. Well, anyway,
Chaim.
I did put on there, I told Carol when I read these articles that she puts on my desk to read them, I said, I have no relation to either one of these people, so you need to put a little publisher's note at the bottom, no relation to the publisher of the American Israelite.
She only put it on one.
I know. I'm not related to these people. All right, Dutch soccer fans chant Hamas Jews to the gas before match, which is just horrible.
What do people think of these things? It's so ridiculous. It almost becomes a comedy after a while.
It really is a comedy.
And then there's a 1,600-year-old mosaic pavement was unearthed in central. I bet that's beautiful.
I love those things. Those are just
And that was actually found in Yavna. You know, which is the city that our beloved Yavna is named after.
Yes.
And then in the centerfold, I think that this on page 11, this picture of this guy, the virus, and his mask is Dr. Fauci, and he's got this virus.
I think that's Richard Behrman.
It does look like him.
I think that's Richard Behrman.
But he doesn't have children that age, but does he work at Jewish? It's all confusing.
He might be there just volunteering, but that looks to me like Richard Behrman.
It does. It does look like it.
And he's got the virus on his head.
Right. He's got the isn't that a cute picture?
That's
one of the best pictures I've seen in the Israelite in a while. That's a great picture.
Well, and also we have an ad this week from the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum.
Yeah, my sister used to work there.
And they're having a virtual event coming up Tuesday, May 11th at noon. And What You Do Matters is the title of it. But anyway, you should check it out and participate.
And there's more Passover pictures.
Right,
and then there's the Jewish Fertility Foundation that we've also had on the podcast. And they're talking about hamantaschen making.
We all love hamantaschen.
And then here's these two things that you've got that you're selling here, the Pelican Cart and the Lawn Beauty. You're selling one for $250 and one for $100.
I'm probably going to be lowering the price a little bit.
Well, you know, and you're going to give one away.
No, I'm not giving one away. She's buying two for the price of one, I think.
Okay.
Well, anyway, so I just got these out of that garage.
Why wasn't that on the front page article? Well, I thought
fire at the Israelite.
Yeah, I thought that should have been on the front page last week.
I never thought of that.
I was so surprised that you didn't have that because when I was out of town and I had heard, I thought, oh my God, that's going to be on the front page of the Israelite. That should be the story on the Israelite front page. next
well, thank goodness that's all that happened. And it's interesting because today the company that's going to be tearing down the house and the building dropped off this huge
The destroyer
has arrived. The destroyer has arrived here at the paper, and they're going to be tearing these stuff. I probably tomorrow and the next day, and it'll be done. It'll take them like 2 days, and they'll be done with it.
Well, on page 14, we're back at Matt's Bakery,
your favorite bakery.
And thank you, Bob Wilhelmy, for putting those cookies on. The next time I'm in Columbus, or the next time I place an order, I'm going to have to ask for those cookies because they look really good, and they have a collection of. Babkas and rugelach, which I love.
I love babka too.
Yeah, I'm actually making babka next week for anyone who wants to know. I am going to be making my babka.
A little
next
sales
week.
Pitch for Julie's. Yeah.
I don't sell them anymore. This week I'm making two giant challahs for a wedding.
Yeah.
And next week I'm making babkas to bring to Chicago. And then I've got another wedding coming up that I'm making some challahs. I don't sell my stuff anymore. I give them as gifts.
All right, so let's go to From the Pages on page 18. This is from In the Beginning, 1854, The Israelitist Institutions of Cincinnati by Samuel Bruhl, which is continued. In the spring of 1853, the City Council of Cincinnati passed an ordinance prohibiting any more interments within the corporation bounds. The cemetery of KKB Yerushalayim, The cemetery of KKB Yeshurun congregation is located within these limits. This interdict greatly embarrassed them because land in any way suited for such purpose is difficult to obtain. So when you had the original city of Cincinnati, and in that, it really only went to almost like Central Parkway from downtown. It was from like the river out to like Central Parkway, and they started burying people within that boundary. They said, you can no longer do this. You've got to move out farther. And that's when they moved to like Clifton, like on Ludlow. That's when those cemeteries started moving out to there.
Well, I believe, and I might be wrong on this, but I believe
for health reasons.
Yes, right, that's what I was going to say. I believe that you have to bear, because at that point they probably, their embalming still was not as good. Now they're embalmed. Well, I guess we don't embalm, but they're whatever it is that they do to the body, and then they're put in a coffin, and then they're put in a cement box.
Well, that was before then,
right?
Okay, so back, and someone told me that when they just put them in a coffin, sometimes the earth would move and you'd have like a flood and all this kind of stuff, and these caskets would come up out of the ground, and that just freaked people out. That would be a little freaky.
Right.
So they stopped doing that, and then they put the burial vaults on top of the coffin so they don't come back up.
Yeah, so 150 years ago, this is interesting, wanted information of the whereabouts of Mr. Weiselbach.
Weilersbach.
A Thiersfield near Bayreuth, Bavaria. Address or call at this office for important information concerning this gentleman, Morris Fischel, Nashville, Tennessee. So I had two thoughts. Either this poor gentleman has passed away and they're looking for his family.
Right.
Or number two, he owes somebody some money and they're looking for him to collect the money.
Or he inherited some money.
Or he inherited money.
He inherited money too. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
125 years ago, I have to read the ladies' column this month because it's pretty funny. I think it kind of relates to me. I know you love it when I talk about myself, but let's think about this. I am now 61 years old. Ladies' column. I find that the older women grow the more they love to be flattered. Quoth a cynical old bachelor. And when they really become passé, you cannot lay it on thick enough. They will swallow everything that is told of them. How it makes me laugh to see the old and fine ladies bowing and smirking and complimenting each other in the same strain that they had adopted when they were fresh and blooming 25 years ago, without apparently realizing that time has played havoc with the woman's charms.
Say time should not be capitalized right there.
Okay. And that the manly proportions of the youths have been changed into the ridiculous figures and bald heads of advanced age. And yet a woman who has once been a beauty will believe she is beautiful to her dying day. And I have heard These elderly dames discuss what is becoming as eagerly as a group of debutantes. Poor old things. I cannot help thinking to myself, after all, it is a merciful providence that permits us to dance as it were on the edge of a grave and to feel the instinct of eternal youth, notwithstanding the increasing decrepitude of our bodies.
Well, you have to remember that back in the day when this was 125 years ago, middle age was like 40-something years old.
But how bad could they look at 40 today? The girls are beautiful at 40 still. You know,
I just saw a picture of, was it Paulina Poroskova? She was like a model back in the 80s. And she was like, I saw it on some news feed that she was at some Academy Award. She looks like, you know, like she hasn't aged a bit.
Wow.
Amazing. Well, anyway, but so back in the day, when people were like 40, that was like middle age. I mean, that was like you didn't live. I mean, I think the age, how old did people live to be? Maybe 50, 60?
I don't know, but we now in the obituaries, they're way into the hundreds now.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So good medicine, good health, we're learning better tricks. And we have things like hair dye and plastic surgery to help the other problems.
Okay. All right, so 75, I like this one. 75 years ago, Cub Scout Pack number 117 will have a picnic at Mount Airy Forest on Sunday, May 12th. Soft drinks and ice cream will be served. Each boy will otherwise bring his own food for supper.
Okay, that's very nice. I believe you have some things you want to talk about on 50 pages.
50 years ago. See, these are my contemporaries, and these are my friends. And so 50 years ago, Shalom, this was in the paper 50 years ago. Shalom, you are cordially invited when our son Kenneth Lee will be called to the Torah and chant the Haftorah on the occasion of his bar mitzvah on Saturday, the 15th of May, 1971, at 9 o'clock in the morning at Congregation Ohav Shalom, 1834 Section Road, Cincinnati, Ohio. To celebrate this Simcha, we would enjoy your company at a reception at our home on Saturday evening at 8:30 o'clock. No cards. Joy and Edwin Tessel.
So
I don't know if they had a kiddush after the bar mitzvah, but they had people over at the house that
night,
Saturday night.
And let's be honest. Remember, no cards meant no invitations were put out. They put this in the Israelite for everybody in the Cincinnati Jewish community. Can you imagine how many people may have showed up at their house?
100.
So I think what we're going to do is we are going to call Kenny Tessel.
We also have one more to do before we call him.
Okay, you want to call him?
All right, so Mr. and Mrs. Jerry Bogdan at 7122 Knoll Road announced the forthcoming bas mitzvah of their daughter Karen Beth on Friday evening, May 7th at 8:30 p.m., and their son Philip Scott, on Saturday morning, May 8th at 9 a.m. at Adith Israel Synagogue. So these were twins. Karen and Philip Bogdan were twins, and I grew up with these people and knew them from Walnut Hills, and they were buddies of mine.
Were you at that bar bat mitzvah too?
Probably. Yeah. Anyway, we want to get back to Kenny.
So we're going to give him a call.
He's a longtime friend of mine. So a little history. Kenny and I both went to Walnut Hills, and then we both went to Ohio U.
Okay.
And I lived in Jefferson Hall, which was my dorm. And I lived in, I think, 324, and then he lived downstairs in like 220 or so. He was like the floor below me. And there was a lot of Jewish guys in that dorm. I don't know if they put us all together for a reason, but there was a number of Jewish guys, and he was hanging out with a lot of these guys from New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to meet all those guys. So I would hang out with them, and they would hang out with my buddies. And then we started AE Pi from that.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you started
a chapter
dorm, there. Nice.
From that dorm. And nice. We, Mike Fischel, who was a friend of the show, He was instrumental, a guy named Mark Hirsch from Lima, Ohio, a Jewish guy, in setting up and forming AE Pi in our dorm. And then the following year, we got a house.
Okay.
It was at 32 North College.
You know, that's a good learning experience organizing.
We had a great time.
Yeah, you order, you learn. It's business skills. It's
and
really good.
And we met so many people from all over the country. Mitch Moalem from New Jersey, and there was people that came into our lives from all over the country. I was kind of like the assistant. Mitch was the house manager, and I was like the assistant house manager. And we had a great time. I mean, you know, our second year of college, we're living in this house and fixing it up. And we were meeting people from all over the country.
Wow.
They're Jewish people from all over the country. It was a great experience. I had a great experience going to Ohio U. And
plug
Kenny,
for Ohio U.
And Kenny was my, you know, I hung out with Kenny quite a bit. And I would see him every day at lunchroom.
Yeah.
You know, we'd go to the cafeteria and eat. And so I saw him.
Well, let's give him a call and see what he has to say.
Hello.
You ready?
Yep.
Hello?
Hello, I'm here.
Hi, Kenny. How are you? This is Julie Brooke, and I'm with Ted Deutsch. And we are calling from the Let There Be Light podcast. You know, I know that you're a friend of the podcast because you told me when I called you yesterday to make sure you'd be around that you knew it was the 50th anniversary of your bar mitzvah. And we just read your invitation, which you had no paper invitations. You had an invitation actually in the Israelite where your parents invited the entire community to your house.
Saturday night.
Yeah, and they came, and they all came, too.
What was the food? I mean, what was the food? I want to know what the food was that night.
Well, was Ted there?
No, I was. I don't know if I was.
No, Ted was at probably the luncheon or the kiddish and the kids' party. My parents had the adult party at the house that night. I don't know. I'm sure they had it catered from somewhere.
Tilly Nobolsky's.
I'm probably Tilly did that. Dad hadn't bought Stanley's yet, so yeah. So I'm sure Tilly probably did it, or Bilkers, or Builders, or one of them.
Yeah. So
that covered it.
Who was the rabbi or the teacher for your bar mitzvah lessons?
Well, I was a member of Ohav Sholem. My family were one of the founding members there, and Rabbi Greenfield was the rabbi, but Herman Moskowitz was the cantor there at the time, and he was my bar mitzvah teacher. I wasn't that great of, shall we say, a Hebrew school student. So,
Who was?
Well, there were a couple, I think, that were pretty good. But Mr. Moskowitz worked with me and Randy Slavin,
right,
and Andy Litwin. Because Andy Litwin and I, we had our bar mitzvah party together.
Because
Andy's father, who had passed away, was my dad's partner in his stock brokerage firm in the beginning. And actually my brother Bobby is named after Andy's father, who is Robert Litwin. And my brother Bobby is named after him.
So you remember what your Torah portion and your half Torah portion were?
I don't remember it, Ted, but you know something? I actually have it on a reel to reel tape that my parents had kept all these years.
Right.
That I just found with Mr. Moskowitz chanting it. But I remember doing the Musaf service and reading from the Torah. And
did you give a Devar Torah and a speech? And if so, what was your topic?
I think my topic was, my mom helped write the speech, and it was about, I think, family and being together and how important that was, so to speak, as I vaguely remember. I was since I went into the theater arts as a profession later on, I was very good at talking. So I remember it, and I got my suit at Steinberg's Clothing.
We were going to ask you that. Yeah, Steinberg's. Yeah, where'd you get your suit? Yeah.
Yeah, well, we went to Steinberg's Clothing. It was either Steinberg's or the Gentry Shop.
The Gentry Shop at Swifton.
Yeah.
Right, at Gentry. My Aunt Betty worked at the Gentry Shop, and my cousin Jeff then worked over at Steinberg's.
So
we were covered pretty good.
At your kids' party, was there a band?
Yeah, it was Mike Selker's band.
Oh, okay.
Back in those days, it was either Selker's band or Carefree Day. I think that was the name of the other band. And I don't know if that was David Stonehill's band or not.
Yeah, I think probably, yeah.
But I remember they only made, I think, like $100 for the night.
That's pretty good back then, about, if you like, think about it.
$20 or $25 a person. There's only four guys or five guys in the band. But and I remember the party was at the old Hospitality Inn in Kenwood, which isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
But I remember my dad complaining about the food to the manager that the food they served. There he goes, that was horrible.
What about you could have had it there at the carousel?
At the carousel or at Frisch's Mainliner, which is the other.
Well, my Barry had his thing. At Schuller's Wigwam.
Schuller's Wigwam, Right.
I miss that slaw, that bacon slaw. I shouldn't say that, but I know.
Yeah, this is a kosher podcast here. We follow all the kosher rules here.
Yeah, so. So tell me, what was, the highlight of your bar mitzvah? What can you, when you think back at your bar mitzvah, what gives you the biggest smile?
Truthfully, I truly don't know. I remember, though, I do remember I have a great picture, which I've been trying to find. It's me dancing with Helen. And Helen was a lot taller than
Who's
me.
Who's Helen?
So I basically, Helen Bass.
She was popular with a lot of the fellows.
So if she was way taller than you, got her to the boobies, right? Your face was in her boobies?
Yeah, that's where my head was. So
he was in heaven. We had to clean this up. We had Rabbi Baum on before and Oprah, and now you, Julie, are sinking into your normal cesspool of disgusting ideas.
We need to clean this thing up a little bit. We were a very tight, committed class. As people know, Ted and I were in the same class.
Yes.
We've grown up together and went to college together.
Yes,
and we were a pretty committed class, and there wasn't a lot of boy and girl dating and this and stuff. We were in groups.
Yeah.
Played basketball at the Jewish Center with Ted through grade school all the way up through high school.
And then don't forget OU and Jefferson Hall.
So give us a quick lowdown on teenage and college. Tell us something that he won't share with us.
Well, let me tell you something about Ted that a lot of people don't realize about Ted. He is super giving, and he's willing to do anything to help a friend. He really is.
That's nice to hear.
Nothing but good things to say about Ted. When I started my barbecue business, Ted was the first person there to help support it, advertise it.
Wait a second. Are you the Tesla that had the Barbie barbecue with the woman that got in trouble in Reading Row?
Yes.
I'm that old school Kenny Tesla. Ted has always been supportive. And after I got rid of the barbecue business, I went back to school and I started working with animals. Ted was very supportive of that. He made sure that people knew out there that what I was capable of, and so I have nothing but high remarks about Ted. I do. Ted comes across as this gruff, tough demeanor, and he is,
and he should be, but I have to deal
with the Jewish community all day long.
Exactly, and you got to have a really tough skin for that,
you do.
But you got to be able to stand up to and fight against injustice.
Right.
And I always thought that Ted was one of these people that did that and stood up for things. And that's important, especially in these troubling times. And I just think that's something that I, as a bar mitzvah, and what I look back on is that I still do that. I am still an activist. Mostly when it comes to animals, because that's what I care about the most. And there's a lot of bad pet owners out there. Let me tell you, there's a lot that shouldn't be pet owners.
There's Bella. You need to meet Bella.
You're going to have to meet my Isabella Zahava Hiawatha.
I didn't know it was Isabella.
It's Isabella Zahava Hiawatha Pocahontas Indian Princess Brooke.
Oh, I didn't know it was Hiawatha Pocahontas, too.
Right. And that's one of the reasons I started this this pet companion business, to let people know there are other options, that they don't have to put their dog into a kennel or board their dog. No dog likes that.
No
cat likes that.
If
no
you
animal
if you
wants
ever with
to be
Bella,
locked
you have
up.
To sleep with her. You have to say you know.
Sleep in the same bed with Bella.
And
rubber
and
so, tummy every night.
Well, you got to do what you got to do.
Okay, this is a family program.
Okay, let's
try and keep it back on a family
program. Let's turn it back.
Here.
Let's bring this back and run this out.
Okay.
So obviously we learned what being a bar mitzvah has taught you and the good lessons and the moral lessons of being a son of the Torah
good,
and above the mitzvah.
Stuff.
So it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And after becoming a bar mitzvah, you went to OU and you own the barbecue business and then you're into pets now. So, you know, how should we round out this conversation getting to know Kenny Tessel? Tell us a few last things and about Kenny Tessel, bar mitzvah boy.
There you go.
Well, I care about animals, and I care that they're treated humanely.
Yeah.
And not as property.
Yeah.
That if you're going to own an animal, that animal should become part of your family. And it should be just as important to you as a child. Because let me tell you, a child doesn't give you unconditional love. A pet animal will. Doesn't matter if it's a cat, a dog, a horse, even reptiles. There is something about that unconditional love that you can't get from a human that I am more than happy to accept from an animal. And that's where I'm at. I'm have to make sure that there are good people taking care of animals. And I should also like to say that if you are going to board your animal, please make sure that those boarding facilities have fire alarms and smoke alarms. You would be surprised. You would be surprised of those that don't. Mm. And they're allowed. By law, they're allowed. Mm. So I would double check those things. But other than that, if you can, there are plenty of good pet sitters around, people that really would take good care of your animal. And that's what I'm about now. I'm about
that's
taking care of animals that can't speak for themselves.
Well, we want to mazel tov on your 50th anniversary of your bar bat mitzvah.
Of becoming a bar mitzvah.
We want to thank
Thanks.
You. Thank you for coming on the show. You've been a great interviewee.
And thank you for being a friend of the podcast.
Yes.
Of course, Ted. Always. And thank you, Julie. Thank you, Ted, for having me on to talk. And
we'll be in touch.
And good luck with everything. I think you guys are doing a great job.
Thank you.
Goodbye, all right.
Kenny.
Thanks, guys.
Take it easy. All right.
I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Well, that was a great interview with your friend Kenny Tessel. Pretty good.
Well, we really don't know. You know, all the facts of me being a teenager and all that. Changed that. I mean, that's it.
Well, moving back to the paper,
yes.
We've got, I have my, finally, I have an article discussing Granternity. That was my...
Oh, that's your new word.
My new word, Granternity leave,
and podcasting.
So I also do explain about podcasts, which I think is something we need to hit on, because what I've learned from a lot of people is they don't really know what podcasts are, and some people don't want to act like they're not into what's new and going on. So I explain a little bit about podcasting.
So we're doing a podcast, but... We need to tell people that are not listening how to listen to a podcast.
Right,
so we need to educate people maybe through the paper.
Through the paper, and I have offered to offer a free Zoom podcast.
We need to talk
class.
To Melissa about, we need to set up maybe an ad in the paper weekly of walking them through of how to listen to the podcast.
Right, and then I'm also willing to...
Step-by-step tutorial.
And I'm also willing to teach privately for free... How
you're
to
gonna
get
teach
on a,
privately how to podcast
how to get on the podcast. So take a few minutes to read my Granternity and podcasting article, and then we are at the obituaries.
All right. So death notices: Leonard S. Stryker, age 91, April 23, 11 IR, 5781.
Please, let's hope we're pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah.
David Mark, age 88, April 22nd, 2021, the 10th of Iyar, 5781.
Stephen J. Applebaum, age 72, April 20, 2021, 8 Iyar, 5781.
Elizabeth Metz-Kukevich, age 69, March 25th, 2021, the 10th of Nisan, 5781.
That's from like a couple, that's March, it's like a month ago.
Wow.
So we didn't get that till late.
Yes, so. And then we have Yehuda Ben Yeshe, Israeli psychologist who pioneered treatment for brain trauma, dies at 88.
All right, coming up is the Bar Bat Mitzvah issue, which is coming up on May 20th. Deadline is May 14th.
And so that's the one we're having Mr. Alan Weiner. And then we also have our travel issue, which is May 12th, and we are having Mr. Ron Richards, the father of Pam. And,
yeah.
Sakes.
Well, then you've got the annual meeting of the Jewish Federation coming up May 12th.
I think that's
going to
be quite a meeting. I think that's going to be quite
you
a meeting
think
this
so,
year.
Yeah,
I think so.
Because of all the stuff going on.
Yeah.
All right, so we get to Joke of the Week for this week. And here we go. This is from The Best of American Jewish Humor by Henry D. Spaulding. He was a runny-nosed little pickpocket in court for the sixth time that year. The judge knew the usual charges against the offender by heart, but this time he raised his brow in surprise. "What's this?" growled the magistrate. "Arrested for stealing a fashion magazine? I guess I'm guilty," confessed the pickpocket meekly. The judge glowered at the subject. "Culprit, what in the world could possibly interest you in a fashion magazine?" "Next season styles," explained the gonif. "I wanted to see where the pockets would be." All
well,
right, so that does it for today. We had a very
busy podcast.
Busy podcast.
And we thank everyone for listening to the end, and we look forward to speaking with you next week. We wish you a Shavua Tov. You know, next week we will have some more surprises.
Well, have a great Lag BaOmer.
Have a great Lag BaOmer.
Have a great tomorrow night, and bonfire it up, and, you know, keep counting the Omer, and then have some fun.
Yep.
You're allowed to have fun on Lag BaOmer. And get a haircut.
Shavua Tov.
Shavua Tov.